Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Office Block podcast with me, Paul Dillon. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at The OB Tweets and find us on Facebook at The Office Block. We are joined today by Dr. Caroline Murphy from the University of Limerick. Caroline is a lecturer in employment relations in UL. You're very welcome on the show, Caroline.
Thanks, Paul.
And also joined by Dec Coates. And Dec and me are well known to each other, and Dec will introduce himself in a little while, but Dec is an FSU sector committee member in AIB and he works in technology. You're very welcome onto the show, Dec.
Thanks a bit, Paul.
Great to have you. I might turn to yourself first, Caroline. Mm-hmm. You are an author of a report, Technology Work and Skills, The Impact of Technology on Employees, which was written by yourself and a team of colleagues. Can you just set out what are the main recommendations in that report?
Okay. So it was probably early last year when we first started work on this report, and we were delighted to undertake that research in conjunction with the Financial Services Union, looking at the impact of technology on workers. We began, obviously, by reviewing the international literature first. We began at looking at what are the key issues for workers before thinking about what we would go out and include in the survey. And I suppose key things we wanted to understand more were what is the impact on workers in terms of their skills, how are skills being replaced, the extent to which work is being automated. We were looking as well at terms of understanding more about how employees are being monitored, the level of surveillance that perhaps technology is exposing them to. And finally, a very key area as well for us was understanding more about how it's impacting on work-life balance, working hours and the intensity with which people are now leading their working lives. So in terms of recommendations then from the report, we obviously wanted to focus on trying to recommend things which will have an impact for trying to improve those issues. So firstly, we recommended that employers pay much more specific attention to what they're doing in relation to upskilling and reskilling of workers as a result of the impact technology is having. Second area we focused on was recommendations around technology use and specifically understanding more about how technology may be overused and the impact of that. So we're very specifically looking at things there like the right to disconnect and introducing, in conjunction with yourselves, a call to support a legislative route to a right to disconnect, similar to what we're seeing in other parts of Europe. Another recommendation we have from the report is, in conjunction with that, stronger, I suppose, really collective bargaining rights for workers, so that disconnect legislation in its own right, we argue, really isn't enough. We need stronger collective bargaining rights to get that right to disconnect properly ensconced in organisations. And then finally, we recommend really looking at, I suppose, the workplace and workforce changes that technology is having. So specifically things like maybe the gender implications that this might have on the composition and makeup of organisations into the future.
And can you tell us a little bit how you went about drawing up the report?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, we looked at the key evidence that's out there in relation to the impact of technology on workers. So internationally and specifically as well within financial services where we could. I suppose the overarching key thing you find when you start researching the impact of technology on workers really is about automation, job loss, job replacement. And we do cover that in the report, and that is a very interesting area, particularly in financial services, where we are seeing, to an extent, a lot of particularly, I suppose, entry-level roles at high risk of automation. Second area we looked at then in terms of research was the impact on workers. So those impacts tend to be the intensification of their jobs. When you look at the literature on that, I suppose you can go way back. You can look back as far as Marx and look at things like the intensification of the working day. How does the employer extract greater value from employees in relation to the working day? Two ways of doing that, I suppose. One, you extend the working day psychologically, physiologically. That's a diminishing rate of return. The longer the working day is, the less you actually get out of an employee. Second way to do that is to intensify work over the actual existing day. So you may try and do that in the office through automating some of the more mundane, monotonous, basic tasks. Or you may look at, for example, flexibility. So it intensifies work in maybe a somewhat obtrusive way, but perhaps a less obvious way. So in other words, my work day is being extended. I'm now working the moment I leave house, my commute to work. I'm now still working in the evenings. So we look at that literature in terms of two types of things. Substitution. So the work I could have done in the office, maybe I'm now doing at home. But also we look at something called work supplementation. So which is extra work, work that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily do were it not for technology. So this is can be the checking of emails, not necessarily always very productive work, but the kind of work that's keeping you actively engaged, your mind is on the job. And I suppose that's very influential in terms of things like having an impact on our ability to switch off, this idea of always on culture. And a key term that's emerging there is the idea of techno stress and the extent to which we are feeling very much very connected to the workplace all the time. We are stressed if we cannot have access to our emails. We are stressed if we find an item of work that we cannot action, maybe because we don't have access to the data or we don't have access to the next key person in the organisation that we need to authorise that work. So it's going on in our minds very regularly. So that was a key thing as well we looked at in terms of undertaking the report. At this stage of the report, we had questions, I suppose, at quite a general area, trying to look at these skills levels, monitoring levels and working hours. We are undertaking a much larger piece of work, which will come out next year, and it's going to look at much more specifics in these areas. So specifically, what is the good side of technology? What is the bad side of technology for workers? And very specific things then in relation to how workers feel they're being monitored, what they feel organisations are doing about potential automation of jobs and so on.
I'm interested in how you have introduced the next report that you're doing. Can you tell me a little bit about how you plan on going about doing that? You mentioned there'll be research, there'll be surveys. How does that work?
Absolutely. So we have, for the last couple of months, we've been involved in developing a survey. So we're looking at rolling that out probably early in the new year, January, February time. And it would be distributed through the Financial Services Union. So we'd be hoping for a very significant take up on that from workers, because we're very keen to understand across all of the financial services and maybe even more widely technology organisations, how exactly workers are being affected. So we're asking questions in key areas, as I said, around skills, around monitoring, but very much again on the impacts. So what is the impact of this having on things like your mental health, your work-life balance, your general well-being? And there is quite a significant breadth of questions which are examining things like the extent to which we have kind of predictability now in our working lives, and control, very much control. Do we feel as a result of technology that we actually do have more autonomy, that we are more in control? Or maybe that control is actually in some ways disguised as greater productivity.
I mean, I'm interested in what you said there, Carolyn, in terms of the recommendations of the report a little bit earlier. One of them centres around that effect of technology on prolonging the working day. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Financial Services Union is campaigning for what's called a right to disconnect. Can you just maybe elaborate a little bit on that and what does that mean?
Yeah, so the right to disconnect, I suppose the country that we look to most in terms of understanding this is France. It was introduced there in 2017, so it's still a relatively new piece of legislation. But interestingly, you can really trace the development of the right to disconnect legislation back to about 2004 in France, when there were cases taken by workers arguing that, for instance, they were disciplined and dismissed for not responding to things when they were on lunch break. So it's quite a long trajectory in terms of getting to where it is today. And essentially the right to disconnect, what it provides for is the ability for employees to have a charter or a policy negotiated in their organisation to ensure that there are curtailments, I suppose, to an extent, around better understanding of how technology will be used, their ability to use technology in a way that is positive for both parties, both the employer and the employee, but limits the extent to which it encroaches on the employee's personal lives. And I would emphasise the importance, I suppose, of that negotiated outcomes. The right to disconnect in and of itself is not going to provide us with the ability to necessarily negotiate those positive outcomes. We need to make sure that they are negotiated in a context where the outcome and the policy is going to have the best result for workers.
Obviously, people need a voice in the workplace to make sure that they actually would have that right to disconnect. Yeah. Decker, to bring yourself in at this point, some of what Caroline has really been touching on there, I suppose we refer to that term, techno stress. Would you say that's an important issue for the Financial Services Union to be involved in and be raising?
I think it's a very important thing because a little bit about my own background. I've worked in technology for quite a while now. I started off in technology working shift work. I spent 10 years in shift, moved into a support role where I spent a lot of time doing on-call and overtime. I then made a conscious decision because of the way it was affecting my life to move away from that type of role into another role, still within technology.
Yeah.
But I found that that was what I needed to do.
Yeah.
Over my life, I've had episodes of depression, episodes of anxiety, and this was something that I needed to do for myself just to give me a little bit of space outside of the workplace. We look at today and we look at the always on, always on scenario. And really, it's bringing me right back to a position where I was and made a conscious decision to move away from some time ago. Now, I've learned to switch off. I have the technology. My company graciously provides me with the company or with the technology to log on from anywhere. I have a phone, a work phone, but I keep it separate from my personal phone, so I can switch that off.
Yeah,
I'm fortunate because I have made that decision now to do that.
Yeah,
the vast majority of people do not seem to realise that that option is there for them. And when I look at I suppose one thing I should say is technology, there are some great benefits.
Sure.
The flexibility it provides, you know,
absolutely.
The opportunities for a decent work-life balance, you know, for dropping off or picking up children.
Opportunity to go on Twitter, go on Instagram, Deck, Facebook.
Yeah, if only. I must do it during the day more often. But, you know, even if you want to attend your kids' Christmas pant or whatever, you can do it. Because there is the technology there nowadays. Another example for myself, I mean, I have a 2-hour commute either way to get to and from work nowadays. So I have the option to work from home a couple of days a week, which I quite often do. Or I could go in, work part of my day outside of rush hour, go home, finish off my day. So, you know, there are those benefits.
And there, like one of the, sorry to cut across, but one of the things that, you know, I'm conscious of is that, you know, you've on your LinkedIn site, for example, your own LinkedIn site, you've, you know, talked about a lot of issues that are interesting for people. You've used that as an outlet. And so obviously there are, you know, technology can be a means of promoting things and getting the word out there. As we speak, we're speaking on World Mental Health Day. And obviously the Financial Services Union has launched this report that commissioned by the University of Limerick. But in addition to promoting that report and arguing for the right to disconnect, we're also raising the issues around mental health and encouraging people to, you know, speak up and speak out about mental health issues. We were just chatting before. I think that's something that you regard as important.
It's very important to me. I mean, I live by a sort of a credo, and that is, every now and again, I try not to just say how are you, but to say how are you.
Yeah.
A colleague of mine takes it one step further. If he knows somebody like ourselves who has been unwell in the past, he'll ask them, how are you today? I learned that how are you from Barbara Brennan, who some of the listeners may or may not know. If they don't, they really should check her out. She's the most fantastic woman I've ever come across. But living with anxiety, living with depression, is in the world today can be quite difficult. So I feel personally there is a need to talk about it in the hope that others will feel that they can talk about it too, but also that people might reach out if they see someone they think is struggling. And then this, I suppose, to a certain extent brings us back to technology. And I spoke a bit there about the advantages of it. But when we come back to the always on scenario, I mean, unfortunately, always on can lead to all kinds of stresses being put on employees.
And techno stress doesn't mean being stressed out listening to techno music. You know, it's a real thing. And the research in the UL report, you know, shows that. Deacon, just another thing I wanted to talk to you about, because, again, we were just discussing before we came on air, is that you know, when I was in school, and that wasn't today nor yesterday, as you know, but when I was in school, the words mental health was never raised. It was never even talked about. Those words, I don't know if they existed. I didn't hear them. Am I right in saying the stigma about this is beginning to lift and people are becoming more open? Or is there still that thing, oh, should I talk about this? Can I talk about this?
There is still a significant stigma attached to it. Last year, I had a holiday in St. John of God's.
Yeah.
And I do know that of the vast majority of the people that I met when I was in the hospital were people who would not be prepared to speak up for fear of the consequences. I, as I've mentioned to you before, have a bit of a gob on me. So, you know, it helps me deal with my own illness if I speak about it and in the hope that talking about it helps somebody else.
Yeah. And I think, Declan, it's great that you've come on because we, you know, this as a union, you know, the Financial Services Union has been raising these issues, has been, you know, partnered with Aware in the past. And, you know, it's very much about opening up that conversation. And it's great to have you, you know, doing that. Can I just switch back for a moment, you know, just speaking generally, obviously, Carolyn, you've done that research with your colleagues in UL and the business school, somewhat ironically named business school, the Jim Kemmy Business School.
It is.
But doing fantastic work down there, no doubt about it. And, you know, one of the things that I just have a general sense of, right, is that I have this belief that, or this feeling, and I'm not even sure if there's any research to back this up now, but that if people are in competition with each other, and if people feel that it's the dog-eat-dog culture, that can be quite bad for people's mental health, that a sense of solidarity and collectivity is far more positive. Now, you're the academic. Have you any research to find out? Is that just a hunch, or is there anything to back it up?
Well, you're really putting me on the spot there, Paul. I think you're definitely onto something when you talk about the research in terms of, is there a culture of dog-eat-dog in organisations? And I suppose to bring it back to this whole idea of mental health and technology, who is it benefiting when we are all making ourselves available for work long into the evening, very early in the morning, on our commute to and from work? Absolutely, there are benefits to technology. Absolutely, there are benefits to the flexibility that it brings. But we have to look at the power imbalance in the employment relationship.
Yeah.
And for the most part, the power imbalance in most situations is skewed heavily towards the employer's favour.
Yeah.
And that can, if we allow it, to propitiate a culture where individuals make themselves available because it is going to do us good potentially for our individual level careers.
Yeah.
And that's where, as you call it, the dog-eat-dog culture starts to come in, where individually I know if I'm the person who's going to be seen to responding quickly to emails, it will do my individual career a lot of good. So again, to come back to the whole idea of right to disconnect, if the right to disconnect were simply just that I'm not going to be dismissed for not answering emails, the organisation of working time in many ways serves that purpose. That's not necessarily what we need to do. We need to change the culture where it's not a case of one or two people aren't answering emails and they know they won't get dismissed. It's a case of where it becomes the culture where there's a norm around how it's used, and that norm isn't used in such a way that it can be exploitative for any certain group.
I mean, one of the recommendations you have in the report, and as we mentioned earlier, is around collective bargaining. And I mean, I think that's very significant because you're recognising, and it references the ILO, the International Labour Organization, it recognises the fact that in Ireland we've a great deal of work to do to give workers a voice in the workplace.
We do. Obviously, there is quite a lot of research in relation to, I suppose, the gap between the freedom of association that we have constitutionally and how that actually manifests in pure representational rights and the value that is given to representational rights in terms of how they're delivered in our current context.
One of the things the FSU has thrown out is the idea of a Fair Work Act, which would reform labour law in order to start to tilt the balance at least a little bit more in favour of workers, at least to give people that voice if they are in a union, that voice can be fully heard. Because as you say, if people don't have that voice, hard to necessarily, you know, if you can't speak up in the first place, if you can't organise in a workplace, how can you improve your terms and conditions?
lessons.
Mm-hmm. Certainly there are lessons to be learned from the Australian Fair Work Act 2009. And I suppose in terms of some of the roads that was made through the 2015 Industrial Relations Amendment Act, there was certainly more to do, to steal that great phrase.
Yes. Indeed, you didn't put the other part in front of the phrase, a lot done, more to do. But yes, point taken.
Yes, a lot done by the union movement.
A lot done, more to do.
One of the other things when we talk about technology and we talk about the ability to work from anywhere, anytime, is that there becomes a pressure on an individual.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm overly sensitive because of my background, but I don't believe I am. But there is a fear of failure sometimes. There's a fear of not doing enough. You know, the big one that I often hear is people... and I've spoken to people who said this to me, they feel they're perceived as being lazy if they're not logged on.
Yeah.
If they're not answering mails at 8 o'clock at night. Yeah. If they're not, you know, logging in as soon as they get up in the morning before they brush their teeth even.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it can also lead to things like unfair peer comparisons.
Yes, yeah, sure.
You know, because everybody's personal circumstances are different. Yeah, you may have somebody who's single and... has plenty of time, who's quite prepared to log on any time of the day.
Yeah.
Then you may have somebody else with family commitments or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, again, a single person who's involved in a club or whatever that doesn't have the same time available to them.
Yeah.
And that won't always be taken into consideration.
Yeah.
So the focus really needs to be on setting fair time.
Yeah.
And, you know... saying, okay, this is a reasonable amount of time to spend.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a 40-hour week or a 39-hour week for a reason.
Yeah, which was hard fought for then. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the Office Block podcast. Please remember to stay in touch with us. You can do so on Twitter at the OB Tweets, at Facebook at the Office Block, and sign up for our email newsletter at theofficeblock.org. Until next time, I've been Paul Dillon, and thank you very much for joining us.